Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
The more things change, the more they stay the same. Welcome into the Hard Count. It is Thursday, March 14th, 2024, the last one on the face of the planet. We're glad to have y'all with us, man. Got a lot to talk about. It's March, and we're about to fill a full hour's worth of college football talk into this podcast, into this show. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a minute of what we got going on right here. It is never too early. Never, ever too early for us to take a look at what's going to happen in week one. And we have a massive matchup in the swamp. It's Florida. It's Miami. It's Cristobal. It's Napier. It is for some bragging rights. It is for some job security. We will take a quick peek at that game here in just a matter of moments. But speaking of big matchups, man, there's arguably the biggest matchup in all of college football that happens the last week of the regular season. In the last couple of years, it has been to determine a college football playoff spot. Michigan, Ohio State. It gets ugly, man. Like, let's just call a spade. Those teams, they don't just not like each other. They hate each other. And that rivalry got a little bit more interesting yesterday with Ohio State having their running backs coach hired away to Michigan in Tony Alford. The timing of this is wild. The fact that it was Ohio State to Michigan is wild. So we got some thoughts on that. Excited to hear what y'all think about that one, because that was one of those moves that made Saquon Barkley leaving the Giants to the Eagles. It made that whole situation look like an ad for world peace. Also, talking a lot about contenders at this point in the year for us right now on this show. We did our tier one contenders yesterday. I made it very clear. I think it's Georgia. I think it's Ohio State from a roster perspective. And then everybody else is kind of filling in behind them. I'm not predicting that's our national championship game right now, but with that being said, we'll give you who we think is in that tier two range who could potentially win a national title in 2024. In addition to that, got to have a conversation here about some of these quarterbacks that are set to, some of them are new places, some of them are some faces we're familiar with that are going to get back to it in 2024. That'll make more sense when we get to that segment. But the difference a quarterback makes, man, cannot be overstated. If you got a quarterback, we say it a lot on this show, you got a chance. So a lot of these teams, I think, will have a drastically different chance if they get the quarterback right at like a 10 out of 10 level as opposed to a 7 out of 10. Excited for that segment. Excited to get y'all's thoughts there. But like I just mentioned at the top of this thing, we got a ton to jump into. Can't waste too much more time. Quick PSA, make sure you are subscribed. There's a lot going on right now. I said it yesterday, kind of tongue-in-cheek, but college basketball season, I believe, is about to start here next week. Again, very tongue-in-cheek there. But with that being said, college football on this show happens year-round. We want y'all a part of it. You being subscribed gives us the best gauge for the content that you want to see. So we appreciate you so much in advance for that. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Jon Bon Jovi said that. And we're going to say that on this show by nature of what's been happening in the college football news cycle over the course of the last couple of days. You got Nick Saban, fresh into retirement, going to Capitol Hill, talking to the folks in D.C. and letting them know, hey, listen, the things I believed in as a college football coach, the things I believed in coaching for 50 years, those no longer exist in college football. Thanks, NIL. Now, folks took that, ran with that, and said, Nick Saban saying he hates NIL. In fact, Nick Saban never said anything of the sort. He's been saying the opposite for the entirety of NIL's existence. He was saying players should get paid, I believe, even before NIL was in existence. But with that being said, the thing that he was trying to say, and we talked about it on this show yesterday, is that, hey, NIL needs to be contextualized, and with the guys that we have in college football right now at the player level, we need to have the right priorities in place. And Georgia football head coach yesterday, Kirby Smart, kind of said the same thing. He said they want to ask, they being recruits and prospective Georgia football players, they want to ask about NIL. They don't want to ask about what your NFL players have done. Essentially saying like they're more concerned about NIL than developing and getting that big money when they get to the league. Again, Saban said the same thing yesterday or a couple days ago saying it's not about you know, how much you can develop me so much as it is about how much can you pay me. And so what's true here, and we said this again, that we're kind of rehashing this, but I think it's important for us to do right now. Some places are going to land more top recruits than they had before because of NIL. Some places are going to be able to throw a bag at a kid, throw him a couple more zeros, and get him to commit to their school. That is a reality. That is what NIL is now going to bring us, especially with the lack of oversight now that we have from the NCAA, which I believe, again, is a good thing. But what's also true is that the big boys in college football, I believe, in large part, will still be the big boys. Like, everyone wants to talk about how NIL is going to negatively impact Alabama, negatively impact Georgia, negatively impact all these top schools across the country that usually have crushed it when it comes to recruiting and the transfer portal. Those schools are always well-resourced. They got top recruits because they were well-resourced, whether it was facilities, whether it was development that they were able to utilize because of the money they put into development. Like, those schools that were always cream of the crop with acquiring talent, they're not going to somehow fall off the face of the earth. They might get 3 5 stars instead of 4 5 stars. But with that being the case, the schools that were able to crush it on the talent acquisition side are still going to crush it on the talent acquisition side in large part. Again, maybe we're spreading the wealth a little bit more. Maybe a school like Missouri is going to land another guy. Maybe a school like Tennessee is going to land another guy. But when you look at the grand scheme, when you look at the macro level of recruiting and talent acquisition, the big boys, I believe, are still going to be the big boys. Look at where the recruiting rankings were in 2018. You got Georgia at the top. You got Bama at the top. You got Ohio State. Fast forward the tape. We're in the NIL era now, right? So much more parity. We're going to have a ton more difficulty if we're Georgia and Bama acquiring top talent, right? Well, in 2024, it was Georgia, Bama, Ohio State as your top three in the On3 industry team recruiting rankings. It's not changing that much. It's changing maybe 7 through 10 in the team rankings when it comes to recruiting. It's not changing that much. Here's the other part, too. A lot is made about how it's going to hurt these coaches and how they recruit. I don't think we're giving enough attention to how much NIL is impacting the players. Like, it has never been more difficult, in my opinion, to block out the external noise as a player than it is right now in modern college football. Not just because of social media, but because of what NIL adds to the table here. How often have we seen guys in professional sports get a big contract, have to deal with a million different outside variables, and then struggle on the field? It happens. It happens. And those are grown adults. Those are 25, 26-year-old cats. You're telling me a 17-year-old is going to get thrown, oh, I don't know, a couple $100,000 and be the same guy he was and be able to deal with that just smooth and in stride? There's more now as a player you have to deal with off the field than ever before. And so what I think needs to be said when it comes to this, the places that are able to help you block out the external noise, that are able to help you lock in to the nth degree, those are the places that crush it in development. Those are the players that get the most out of their talent. Like, what I'm saying here is the great organizations are going to do two things. One, they're going to adapt. You don't think Georgia is adapting to the NIL world with how they're allocating funds, with how they're helping their players in the off-the-field side of things? I promise you they are. Second part of this, they are going to still get the most out of their team. Still going to get the most out of their team. Why? Because Georgia, they don't care how much you made on Bloody Tuesday. On Bloody Tuesday, that physical practice that the Georgia Bulldogs have on game weeks or, you know, padded practices during the offseason, those are going to, I say offseason, spring football rather, that's still a reality. That's still going to pull the most out of you. So if you can't hang, that's going to get exposed pretty quickly at Georgia. But if you buy into how they do things, you're going to help yourself develop, become the best player you can be, and have success in the NFL. That's not my opinion. That's literally what the numbers are telling you when you look at how well Georgia has done at the NFL draft. Florida State, same thing. I know the sample size is pretty small right now when it comes to the transfer portal and NIL, but Mike Norvell and company over there, they've crushed it. They've crushed it in being able to bring guys in. You have to imagine having an attractive NIL package for them. Again, that's my assumption. And then be able to put them in position to be successful. It can't just be one thing of NIL over here on one hand. It can't just be the one priority of get me a bag, that's all I care about. To be successful, maybe NIL is a tool, maybe it's a side dish, but it's to help you capitalize on, again, your opportunity as a player, opportunity from a public standpoint, But the real money, again, is balling out in college and then getting to the league. The places that help you do that pre-NIL era, I believe will still be effective in doing that in the post-NIL era or in the NIL era that we're in right now. So again, the more things change, NIL's changing it for top coaches, man. They can't hang anymore. Yeah, some coaches might not love it, and they might want to shift in terms of their role, and they might want to leave for the NFL. But for the most part, the places that had great structures in place that can adapt, that have great processes to get the most out of their players, that's still a reality. That's going to stand the test of time, and the ones that need to be adapted will adapt and be successful in that way. Again, 2018, Georgia, Bama, Ohio State, the top three teams in the recruiting rankings. In 2024, pretty much the same cast of characters. 7 through 10 might change in those recruiting rankings year in and year out. Might have some new entries to the top five. For the most part, though, it's kind of staying the same. Great organizations, man. They stay great when it comes to what they are organizationally. Just is what it is, man. Just is what it is. Speaking of great organizations, we got two of them that absolutely hate each other in Ohio State and Michigan. And we had an absolute bombshell drop yesterday when Tony Alford, the running backs coach at Ohio State as of 24 hours ago, took the job to be the running back coach at Michigan. So this is crazy for a number of reasons. I think this one-off clip is going to do pretty well. So if you're watching right now, Michigan fans, Ohio State fans, regardless of what you root for, who you root for, make sure you're locked in right here. College football every single day, live three times a week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 11 a.m. Eastern. Want y'all here. Thank you so much for that. All right, let's keep it rolling here. Tony Alford leaves Ohio State for the running backs job at Michigan. He was the running backs coach at Ohio State, really successful at Ohio State, was there for 9 years, coached guys like Mike Weber, J.K. Dobbins, Ezekiel Elliott. Like, this is not a small loss for Ohio State, which we'll talk about more here in just a moment. The timing is brutal. Like, this is, they're in the middle of spring practice as Ohio State. So as a player, you're now going to have somebody new for the duration of spring practice to run you through individual drills, to try and coach up the offense. Like, I'm curious to see what Ohio State does here long term. But in the short term, this is just brutal because you're stretching your coaching staff even more thin than it was. The timing could not be more or less ideal. But the part that makes it more brutal is obvious. It's leaving for that other logo. If Tony Alford left to be the head coach at a G5 school, I think most people would say, hey, this isn't ideal for us because, again, it's spring practice. But go do what's best for you. Go be a head coach somewhere. Awesome. Or if it was a running back's job somewhere else, hey, still don't love that. I don't love that you went and took the running back's job at insert whatever power conference school you want to there. But we get it. We understand. Do what's best for you. The do what's best for you and we get it sentiment, I think, left when you saw that Michigan logo. He's literally leaving for the school that they preach that they hate 365 days a year. They cannot stand Michigan. And that's pretty obvious to say right now, but I think it needs to be mentioned when it comes to how the players likely feel internally about Tony Alford leaving. There could not be another school that they would hate for him to leave more for. I said at the top of this live show, I tweeted it out yesterday, Saquon Barkley leaving the Giants for the Eagles. Tiki Barber is saying, hey, you're dead to me, Saquon. You got folks in New York that I'm sure probably burned number 26 jerseys the other day. This move, Tony Alford from Ohio State to Michigan, makes that look like a world peace ad. All right, this is only going to pour fuel on that fire when they meet here that last week of the season in November. Why is this happening? Pretty fair question. I'm going to go ahead and give you my best estimate of what I can tell the situation is. Tony Alford had a lot of different jobs offered to him from other schools throughout the time at Ohio State. Over a nine-year stint in Columbus, a lot of places came knocking. And every single time, Ohio State said, all right, we see that. We're going to do what we have to do to keep you. They give him a better situation, it sounds like, and they were able to keep Tony Alford on staff. But that can only happen so many times before eventually another school is going to be able to poach him. Like LSU came knocking, to my understanding, throughout the time in Columbus. Notre Dame came knocking at different points when Tony Alford was in Columbus. But after a while, like, you can only defend a coach for so long. And it sounds like this is a better situation from what I'm understanding for Tony Alford financially. Good for Tony Alford. Good for Tony Alford. Go do what's best for you. Again, the timing is brutal. The place that you're landing is brutal if you're an Ohio State fan or you're an Ohio State player. But at the end of the day, good for Tony Alford. Go do what's best for you. Now for Ohio State, I expect them to swing big for whoever that next running back coach is going to be. Like, I think nobody is safe when it comes to who that running back coach could be. If you're a big-time college football program today, you check in with your running back coach. Names off the top of my head that I don't know have any validity to. There's a full list of names on Letterman Row, Ohio State's, or on Three's Ohio State site, so go check that out. Spencer Holbrook, Tim May, Andy Backstrom, crushing the coverage. Get a membership there. They will keep you in the know up to the exact minute when it comes to this running back coach search. Some names, though, that I would consider: DeMarco Murray, running back coach at Oklahoma. He went to Oklahoma. He will not leave Oklahoma, in my opinion, for a small price point. Got to at least give him a call. Tashard Choice, ace recruiter out there in Austin at the University of Texas, their running back coach. Played at Georgia Tech. Give him a call. Throw a bag at him. Do whatever you have to do to get him to come to Ohio State. Eddie George, it's already been reported he's not interested. He's a head coach at Tennessee State. Good for Eddie George. But again, he's an alum. At least give him a call. Shoot him a couple texts. Hey, Eddie, you up? Shoot him a FaceTime and see if you can get him to take that running back's coach job and get him back home to Columbus. You at least got to call him. You at least got to call him a few times to make sure he doesn't want that job. But when it comes to what this mold will be for Ohio State, be a couple of things. I think it'll be a young guy. I think it'll be someone who can connect with recruits, who can be that asset for them on the recruiting trail. That's, I think, the mold it'll be in, and someone that I think could have some longevity, maybe a rising star kind of prototype for the Buckeyes. So they're going to swing big here. It hurts to lose your running back coach. It hurts the timing they lost their running back coach in. But there is an opportunity now to swing a pretty big bat with that logo. And, Ohio State, man, they're not going quietly into that good night. When it comes to what it's going to do for their running back room, man, like, they're still in good shape. Right? Like, Quinshon Judkins, 1,000-yard back in the SEC, they're going to be okay. Travion Henderson has proven he's a 1,000-yard back as well. Chip Kelly's running the offense. It hurts on the macro level to lose Tony Alford for Ohio State, but at the end of the day, like 2024, I think will look very much so how it would have if he had stayed the running back coach. So that's the Ohio State side of things. For Michigan, like, I think it's pretty cut and dry. This is a win. There's no way around it. This is a win. You hired a running back coach that has a solid track record as a coach and as a recruiter, and you took him from the team that you hate. Like, you probably would have hired Tony Alford regardless of what school he was at. You can't tell me it didn't sweeten the deal a little bit that it was at your rival school. Sharone Moore now, as far as I can tell, 2-0 against Ohio State. Good for him. There's no other way to slice it. This is a win for Michigan. They're going to have their fun on social media. They should have their fun on social media. They should enjoy their dunk session. Like, good for Michigan. This is a big-time hire by them. Sharone Moore adds another piece to his staff that will help in the acquiring talent sector of things for the Wolverines. Because that's sort of an interesting part to look at here. When Sharone Moore got the head coaching job in Ann Arbor, the label he had was, hey, he's going to really prioritize recruiting. He's going to make it more of a point for him to go and add top talent to Ann Arbor. Well, he's got somebody else on his staff now to further push that mission of making Michigan a team that kind of recruits in that top 10 range, I believe at least, will be their efforts. Because Michigan previously, really big developmental school. They'll touch the top 10 a few times. Usually they're in that top 15. I don't expect any exodus from Ohio State's running back room, but I do think that Michigan overall is going to bolster their recruiting efforts. And then obviously when it comes to this game, that last weekend of November, or the last weekend of the season in November, there's going to be a lot of juice. Going to be a lot of juice, because I promise you, the folks in that locker room in Columbus, they feel some type of way about their coach leaving for the rival school and when he left. I'm just saying, there's going to be no shortage of energy, as if that rivalry needed anything else to add to it. It's got all the juice and then some when it comes to that weekend. So that'll be a lot of fun. But Tony Alford has left Ohio State to be the running backs coach at Michigan. Hey, appreciate everybody dialed in live, man. This is an awesome, awesome crowd we got for our Thursday. Biggest Thursday of the week. No way around it. Biggest Thursday of the week, so we're make sure we have a day here. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you've liked the video. We're going to keep a good thing rolling here. Let's get this contender series on and popping. We talked about it yesterday. Our Tier 1 contenders in the college football landscape are Ohio State and Georgia. There's no way around it. Those are the two teams that I think from a roster level, from a coaching staff level, I feel the best about, even with the exit of Tony Alford. So with that being said, You got tier one over here. Well, that means there's other tiers. Who's the tier two teams when it comes to the national championship contention? Got a couple of them here. This is a much wider field than we talked about yesterday, obviously with two teams yesterday. Let's define what a tier two contender is. Tier two is essentially like you would not be surprised in the slightest if they won it all. This is not your dark horse. This is not your sleeper. These are teams that you feel pretty good about going into the year being in that 10-win range. Now, with that feeling that, hey, I like who they have on that roster, maybe you like their staff, we'll talk about those more in a minute, you still have a little bit of hesitancy. There's still some unknowns about them. So we'll talk about them right now. First team we got to talk about here is your former, is former the right word? Big 12 champion, as we know it, the Texas Longhorns. They're still roped in for that climb, man. They're still roped in for that climb. Yes, you lost some key pieces, but even with that being said, you have yourself fully stable and harnessed in with Steve Sarkisian running the show and Quinn Ewers as your quarterback. In my opinion, the most important pieces a part of your football organization, Texas still has intact. On top of that, they have a championship culture. How long did we talk about Texas and not having the right pieces culturally and not having the right things they were caring about and how they had to lock in and be all about Texas football? That, I truly believe, was put to bed a season ago. They have now arrived. We're not doing the whole Texas is back, they're not back. Texas has arrived in the Steve Sarkisian era. Quinn Ewers has weapons, too. Yes, you lose Xavier Worthy. Yes, you lost Adonai Mitchell. But those weapons, man, Silas Bolden from Oregon State, he's a Swiss Army knife that I think a lot of folks are going to learn about nationally this upcoming season. A lot of people probably didn't see him play last year because he was at Oregon State and their games were on at like 10 Eastern. Rest in peace, Pac-12 After Dark. We love you. We miss you. Isaiah Bond, staying in the SEC. He was at Alabama last year. A guy that I think has more juice than what we even saw last year by nature of how Alabama's offense operated. It was very much so a Jalen Milroe run the football kind of offense. I think with Quinn Ewers dealing the rock for him, he's going to have a big year. Amari Nyblak, tight end that flashed at times for Alabama last year as well. He's now in Austin. Stable of backs too. Jonathan Brooks is back, which is massive for them. C.J. Baxter was a stud true freshman for them last year. So offensively, you got all the ingredients you need to be successful. Now, with that being said, as long as you have the ingredients for Steve Sarkisian, he's proven, man, he is one of the best chefs offensively in college football. So you give him what he needs, he's going to cook. The question marks, though, are obvious. You lose 1,800 yards receiving between Xavier Worthy and Adonai Mitchell. I love Moneyball. I love the way that they were able to aggregate the replacing of those players in Jason Giambi and Matt Damon. No, Johnny Damon, not Matt Damon. He's an actor. You hear what I'm saying? I think that 1,800 yards receiving is going to be a little bit more difficult to replace than maybe we're anticipating right now. Also, they lost not one but two All-Americans in the middle of that defensive line with big T'Vondre Sweat and Byron Murphy. So as they move into the SEC, it's not ideal to lose those pieces, but still, all that being said, if you're putting your faith somewhere as a Texas Longhorn fan, it's in Quinn Ewers and Steve Sarkisian to be able to keep things stable and keep things operating at the level that you hope they would be as you head into the SEC. This next team, man, we are very transparently extremely high on. We love the way they're trending, and that is the Oregon Ducks. Oregon, to me, feels a lot like how Thanos talked about himself in The Avengers. And Nick Brake, big movie guy. He doesn't love Marvel, but we're going to talk about it anyway. They are inevitable. That's the way that it feels to me. Oregon, I believe, is inevitable. And in 2024, they have a six-year quarterback in Dylan Gabriel who has been successful everywhere he's been. UCF, Oklahoma, doesn't matter. Dude just balls out. They got an offense that's going to play to his skill set with Willie Stein running the show. And they got multiple playmakers for him to get the football to. Most notably, Tez Johnson, 1,000-yard receiver a year ago. Stick of dynamite, and then Evan Stewart, who I think has a very real case to be the best offensive player in the transfer portal over from Texas A&M. So they got a lot of pieces offensively, but then the key part of this, and we've said it for a while, they have the price of admission on the line of scrimmage. Defensively, 330, 300, 270 at that jack position, and 290. That's their weights. Okay, they're going to be more than fine to be physical enough on that side of the football at that position group. In the Big Ten now, we know it's a line of scrimmage league. Oregon has more than enough of what they need on that line of scrimmage. The questions, though, are obvious. Are they able to have enough defensively, especially on that back end, if they run into the equivalent of a Michael Penix Jr. from last year. Because that was the thing. They were trying to be complex. They were trying to heat him up. And Michael Penix Jr. was just back there playing darts, man. Like, he was just carving him up like it was Halloween. I really, really love the way that they've attacked the portal. But even with that being said, you still have to have those transfers mesh for you. Does Evan Stewart mesh seamlessly into this offense? I'm curious to see. So Oregon, without question to me, is a contender. Put them in that tier two range because of the fact that they have some new pieces and because of what we saw them lack on the back end defensively last year. But Dan Lanning, man, I'll tell you what, stock is going one way. If you can get it at a reasonable price, buy that Oregon Duck stock because it's headed one direction. Alabama, they lost a lot. Yeah, they did. There's no way around it. They're 115th in the country in returning production. But this Alabama team that played in the college football playoff last year and won the SEC last year, they were 125th in returning production the year before. So if we're doing the math here, Alabama actually has more returning production this upcoming season than they had a year ago. The obvious part, Nick Saban no longer running the show. Can't overlook that. But you still have one of the best coaches in college football, right? Like, Kalen DeBoer is 104-12 as a head coach. That's not an accident. He hasn't lucked his way into that kind of winning record. I think you put Alabama in the tier two contender space until you can't, until they show you, quite frankly, until they're blatant and saying, hey, listen, we're not the same Alabama we used to be. My question marks, though, is Jalen Milroe able to be what he was against LSU last year consistently? Because there were times last year where Jalen Milroe was the best player on the field. Not all the time, but there were times where you saw that from him. Obviously, it's a new offense. Are they going to cater to his skill set, or are they going to ask Jalen Milroe to be what Michael Penix Jr. was at Washington? Because if it's the latter, it could be a bumpy acclimation period for everyone in Tuscaloosa. The obvious part of this, too, like, yeah, you replace a lot. I just talked about the production that they don't have coming back, but they have 33% production returning on the defensive side of the football. It's hard to make that up right away. They have a lot of production they have a lot of talent that's unproven. I don't think it's necessarily a case where you just have a bunch of 2 and 3 stars in the wings for you, but still, there's going to be a little bit of a wait and see here when you talk about Alabama. Let's stay in the SEC. I think LSU is a tier two national title contender. And we'll talk about our question marks in a second. But as we sit here in March, man, I trust who's driving that bus, baby. And that is a one Brian Kelly. He told us here on this very show, yeah, year three for me is pretty good. Yeah, year three, I tend to like year three. We usually have a pretty good amount of success in year three. He wasn't trying to make headlines. He was just being real. And you look at his track record, he's keeping it a buck. Year three at Cincy, 12-0. Year three at Notre Dame, national title appearance. Year three at LSU, is that a national championship? I don't know, but I really like this roster. I think the defense last year massively underperformed. And that's encouraging if you're an LSU fan because you say, yeah, of course that you underperformed. But no. It wasn't like you underperformed in the sense of what your standard is. I think you underperformed in relation to your roster talent. Blake Baker coming over from Missouri. They're going to heat you up. They're going to get after you. Put Harold Perkins hopefully in position to be successful and do Harold Perkins things, which is absolutely maul the quarterback and let him be aggressive. I think that's going to bode well. If the defense is even slightly better from a year ago and the offense is in a similar tier as it was a year ago, LSU could win the SEC. And I don't think we talk about that enough. Now, a big part of the offense staying where it was a year ago is the gumbo gunslinger, Garrett Nussmeier. Is he able to continue what he did in the bowl game into next season? Remains to be seen. But Brian Kelly told us on this show, man, he's like, everything you've seen from Garrett Nussmeier has been in limited action. It has been with him taking mostly practice reps with our second team. So Garrett Nussmeier has been nowhere near his ceiling. So I'm excited to see what he looks like. The defensive question marks are fair and they're obvious, but if you're trusting the person who's running the operation, and we're trusting Brian Kelly's trend at his different stops over the course of his last couple of jobs he's had, year three could be a big year for LSU. Last team to get to here, it is the Michigan Wolverines. There's an Elton John song called I'm Still Standing. I'm not going to sing it because I don't want us to get copyright strikes, but here's the deal, man. Michigan is still standing. Yes, they're 128th in returning production out of 134 teams. That is not a good thing, but you cannot overlook the fact that what they had in-house last year was a lot of key developmental guys. And I think a lot of those guys that didn't contribute how they want to last year still got developed and are primed to do some really good things in 2024. Also, the pieces that are back that did contribute, massive. Colston Loveland, Donovan Edwards, Kenneth Grant, Will Johnson. We talk about it a lot on this show. They have a lot of key pieces that I don't know are reflected necessarily in returning production. The question marks are fair and they're obvious. Like new head coach, Sherrone Moore. He's 3-0 as a head coach. If you want to talk about him being 2-0 against Ohio State with the hiring of Tony Alford, be my guest. New defensive coordinator, Wink Martindale. How does that look? New quarterback. I expect it to be Alex Orji taking reps with the ones during spring practice. We'll see what happens there. I wouldn't be surprised if they went and got a transfer portal quarterback. Again, we'll see how that whole thing formulates, but there is a lot still in-house at Michigan to be excited about and to hang your hat on. You can't talk about tier two contenders for the national championship and not talk about the team that just won the whole darn thing a year ago. That feels disrespectful. That feels irresponsible. Two things of which we try not to be on this show. So our tier two contenders are as follows. Texas, Oregon, Bama, LSU, and the national champions looking to repeat, Michigan Wolverines. Let me know who y'all would put in that tier two range, though. It's that part of the year where we got to kind of take a look at things and take a look at the landscape, and I think that is the teams that would not surprise me if they won the national championship, but teams that, as we sit here in March, we have a healthy amount of question marks to where we're going to put them at that second rung of national title contenders. How about it? How about it? Another thing that it's never too early for is taking a look at week one, man. I mean, a lot of people are talking about March Madness, NFL free agency. That's great, but we talk about college football on this show. And one of the biggest games of week one from a brand's perspective, from a storyline's perspective, is that game in Gainesville. I fully expect this to be a night game. There's no time announced right now, but if it's not at night, I don't know what we're doing here. Miami, the Hurricanes, and Coach Cristobal going to Florida, going to the Swamp, and seeing Billy Napier and company for a big, big-time show-me-something year for everyone out there in the Swamp. That'll be a lot of fun. I think this one-off clip will do well also, so I'm going to make a quick plug here. Make sure you're subscribed. If you're watching the live show, we love y'all. We love y'all for being a part of this. This is a college football community, and we're glad to have you in here. Whether you're a Miami fan, whether you're a Florida fan, whoever you root for, we're glad you're here. If you're finding this, though, and we're not live on the air right now, no worries. Again, we're live Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 11 a.m. Eastern. Get in here. We have a lot of fun talking to the live chat. It's a good deal. Best way to make sure you don't miss anything, being subscribed. Football season never stops on this platform. Some keys to the game, man. We got to do that when we're going to talk about the never too early preview for Miami at Florida. Cam Ward making his first start as a Miami Hurricane. I fully expect him to be the starter. I understand Miami took another quarterback through the portal. It'll be Cam Ward. And if it's not, that's a whole other discussion. Florida's going to throw the kitchen sink at him. All right, Coach Armstrong and the boys, they're going to try and heat him up. They're going to try and confuse him. And if they're able to do that now, understand, this game being played in Gainesville is very different than if it were played in Coral Gables. That stadium, I'm assuming it's a night game, that stadium in the Swamp will be a powder keg ready to erupt at the first interception, at the first strip sack, at the first sack period. Like, there is going to be a ton of juice. It's going to be like a big balloon. If you take a needle to that thing and make it pop, could throw things into chaos. It could be a frenzy in Gainesville if they're able to get after him and have some success in doing that. So for Cam Ward, at what level of comfortable are we with this offense under Shannon Dawson? A lot of what's going on during spring practice is going to dictate exactly what the answer is to that question. But for Cam Ward, is it comfortable to the level where we're able to just be reactive and play football? Hey, I see them bringing pressure off the edge. I know where my hot is. I know what I need to check to. I know where everybody is on the field. Or with 100,000 screaming fans yelling at you, probably not the nicest things, do you have to think a little bit? Is it a little bit more of, okay, wait, what is this? Where is my read? What am I? If you're having to think in a scenario like that, it's going to be difficult because, again, based on all the circumstances here, it's just hard to think when you're in the Swamp, especially at night. A subplot within this now, Miami's receiving core, they got some work to do. Xavier Restrepo is that dude. I mean, he is providing all the Kool-Aid and then some for yours truly by nature of what we're seeing on social media, him making over-the-shoulder catches during practice. Like, Yeah, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. That's what you're supposed to do in March. But if he's able to separate along with some other Miami wide receivers, that's going to make Cam Ward's job much easier. However, if they get jammed up, if they're not able to create enough space for him to throw the football, then if you're Cam Ward, you get back there, you know where you're supposed to go with the football, nobody's open, then things get kind of tricky. Then he has to ad lib. Just overall, not a good deal. I'll say this, the less broken plays for Cam Ward in the swamp, especially early, the better. Now, if they have some success and things start to trend the right direction for Miami and they get some momentum, then those broken plays could lead to some more positive things. But especially if it's even or they're down a couple points early as Miami, that would make for some chaos and I think put you in a bad spot if you're the Hurricanes. For Florida now, is there an extra thing to worry about for that Miami defense when you have the football? Graham Mertz, I think, is one of the most disrespected players in the entire country at quarterback. He came over from Wisconsin, had his fair share of poor decisions. I thought he was more than fine last year. The thing for Miami, though, defensively, is if they have to worry about somebody besides Trey Wilson. Trey Wilson, super freshman last year for the Gators. It's going to be very obvious this upcoming season. Get number three the football. Get him the football, whether it's speed sweeps, whether it's bubble screens, whether we're pushing the ball to him downfield. He is the best player on your offense. Feed him. Now, we know that, but here's the other part of this. The folks in Coral Gables, they also know that. They watch a lot of film, too. They know they got to take away number three. And so if Miami is able to limit number three, Florida's got to have an answer. It's got to be Montrell Johnson. It's got to be Andy Jean. It's got to be somebody else within this offense for Florida that can step up and take some eyes off of Eugene Wilson. Eugene, Trey Wilson, same person, just so we're all on the same page there. If they're able to put a lid on Trey Wilson and they're able to heat up Graham Mertz, bad things are going to happen. But if you have answers, then it's a pool party at that point. Everybody's having a good time. Get the ball to Trey Wilson. Get the ball out to whoever else you want to insert in that next sentence, whether it's Andy Jean or Aiden Mizell, whoever it is. If you're able to then have somebody else that can hurt this Miami defense, things start to compound. Then the run game opens up. And that's kind of the next part of this whole thing. The answer of who wins this football game, we'll make our prediction when we get to this game here during our week one preview show, which should be an absolute blast. Again, another reason to be subscribed. The answer to who wins this game is pretty boring, because it's kind of what's true across every single football game. Who wins up front? And I understand that doesn't read great on a tweet. It probably doesn't sound the most intelligent when you go and talk to your friends at the water cooler. But sometimes, man, boring is the answer. Sometimes simplicity is the key. Whoever is able to dominate the line of scrimmage and get the best push up front, offensively and defensively, helps your quarterback. For Miami, it could ease Cam Ward into the game. Could mess with those safeties on the back end for Florida and allow some deeper shots downfield, make it more easy for your guys to separate. Also, at the end of this thing, for either side, it could come down to a four-minute drill. It would not surprise me in the slightest if Florida has the ball at the end of the game and Graham Mertz has to hand the ball to Montrell Johnson three times in a row to get a first down, reset the downs, keep the clock moving. That could be the way that it goes for 4 minutes to put the game on ice if you're the Gators. So for either side of this thing, whoever is able to get after the quarterback and provide a push up front for their offense, that's going to be the key ingredient, in my opinion, to winning this football game. We talk about Cam Ward, talk about Graham Mertz. I think it's a lot about the line of scrimmage. Now, the impact of this game is massive. I'd be remiss if we didn't at least touch on this before we moved on here. Billy Napier in Florida, this game is a tone setter. It's a tone setter. You got an in-state team coming to your house, a place where you have historically played pretty well in some big games. You think about Utah in the first game of the Billy Napier era. You think about Tennessee coming to the Swamp last year during the night game. This is a place where you're expected to defend home field. You play won't back down at the start of the fourth quarter. The place will be going nuts. Like, this is the game where we need to show us something. Show us something if we're Florida. Because if you drop this game, you very clearly find yourself in that third spot before you play Florida State in the state at the end of the year. That's not a situation you want to be in. You want to be able to provide some momentum, provide some confidence, provide an example and say, hey, we are actually a lot better than a lot of y'all would like to think. We just play in the SEC and have had some tough year two struggles from last year. Year three, though, we're here. Year three, here's some proof in the pudding. Enjoy it. Now, for Miami, it's kind of a similar story, but I think a lot of folks would probably put them in that two spot behind Florida State in the state of Florida. If they're able to beat Florida in Gainesville with everyone in the swamp and silence that thing, it would reaffirm all the progress that Miami has made from year one to year two, now going into year three. We talked about it yesterday, or maybe it was the Tuesday show. There's a lot of progress that's happened at Miami. They went from 5-7 to 7-5, and that's a 2-win improvement. I'm sure that feels good to be playing in a bowl game and things like that, but the reality here is there has been much greater strides made when you look at the numbers from year-over-year growth, from total offense, total defense. Like, they've made massive jumps there. So to be able to actually have it translate with a big-time win in-state on the road against the SEC team in the state of Florida, be massive. It'd be massive, and it would be another tremendous mark on the graph of the progress for Mario Cristobal in Miami so far. So Miami at Florida. If it's not a night game, what are we doing here? If it's not a night game, we'll have a whole other discussion, but I expect it to be a night game. I expect won't back down to have the place going crazy, and I expect a tremendous matchup between both those schools. So that'll be a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Hey, let me know, too, on Twitter, who else you want us to talk about in our Never Too Early series. So we got a couple of series going on right now. We got the Contender series, which we're going to continue. We got the Never Too Early series, which just kicked off. Never too early to start talking about some of these great games across the college football landscape. All right, get in the live chat. Let us know what you want to talk about. Let us know your takes, your concerns, your questions. Also, like the video if you get in the live chat. Just a good trade-off there. One more segment to go here. I want us to talk about the difference a quarterback can make. Because we talk a lot about other positions and the line of scrimmage and talent level. But here's the deal, man. There's a couple of teams across the college football landscape to where if you get the quarterback right, it is a powder keg. It's a powder keg. Like, some of these schools could just absolutely blow up if they get that quarterback position right to the level that they could get it right. So all the quarterbacks I'm talking about right now, massive, massive potential. The team which I think arguably has the most potential and the quarterback with the most potential is Notre Dame. Riley Leonard and what he could be in this offense is nothing short of sensational. You saw what Mike Denbrock did with Jaden Daniels at LSU last year. They scored over 40 points a game. Jaden Daniels won the Heisman. He was running it. He was throwing it. Riley Leonard isn't the same kind of athlete as Jaden Daniels, but he still brings some of those things to the table where you better not fall asleep at the second and third level of your defense because he can hurt you. Key pieces back on defense. Xavier Watts, Benjamin Morrison. I think the defense is in a solid spot, even with the guys they lost to the NFL. And that wide receiver room now, there's some guys that can go. They did some things through the portal, got Jaden Harrison from Marshall, Chris Mitchell from FIU, both guys that are dynamic playmakers. Let's talk about it this way. If you put Jaden Daniels and his production a season ago at Notre Dame, Notre Dame's in the playoff? Notre Dame's at least sniffing the playoff in that conversation. I'm not telling you Riley Leonard is going to be Jaden Daniels, but let's run it through that filter. If Riley Leonard just explodes and has the similar amount of success as Jaden Daniels last year, even in a similar area code as Jaden Daniels, Notre Dame is going to be a force. And they're absolutely in that 12-team playoff, which we would love for Marcus Freeman, transparently. Another team that needs to be talked about here as a powder keg if their quarterback translates the way that he could translate is Tennessee. Think about it this way. In 2022, did anybody want to see a healthy Tennessee in a 12-team playoff with Hendon Hooker and company? Hendon Hooker, let's say he never gets the knee injury and he stays rolling at a really elite level. He's probably in New York City for the Heisman Trophy ceremony. It's neither here nor there. But, like, imagine you see that team in a 12-team playoff. I think you could see a version of that from Tennessee this year with Nico Iamaliava, the number one player in the class of 2023. No physical limitations to his game. He can run it. He can throw it. You saw it in the bowl game with the RPO stuff they did with him. If he's able to hit the ground running and be consistent with throwing the football downfield, this offense is ready-made for him to put up big numbers and for Tennessee to score over 40 points a game. You don't believe me? Look at what last year was. Joe Milton, I don't think he was bad. I think he probably gets a bad rap in terms of how people talk about him. But he wasn't near the productive nature that Hendon Hooker was. Still, what happened? Tennessee scored 30 points a game. 30 points a game. That'll get it done for you in most cases. So if Nico's able to be a version of what we project him to be out of the high school level to now having his first real chance to be the guy at Tennessee, he's going to have a chance. He's going to have a chance. Tennessee's going to have a chance. Josh Heupel, we talked to him a year ago. We also talked to him this year, but we talked to him a year ago, asking about how good Nico could be at Tennessee. He said he is as talented as a quarterback as he's been around. Mic drop. Josh Heupel's been around some good quarterbacks. And saying Nico has as much juice as any of them, shouldn't have overlooked that. To give us a similar translation we saw from Notre Dame and Jaden Daniels, let's try on the Michael Penix Jr. to Tennessee kind of lens for Nico Iamaliava. If you put Michael Penix Jr. in that offense a season ago, they're probably in Atlanta, at least, maybe more. So I'm not saying Nico has to be Michael Penix Jr. I'm just saying I think when it comes to how he could translate and his talents he has, Tennessee is a powder keg with all they have in that wide receiver room, with how they've improved their defense since Hendon Hooker was there. Tennessee is going to be a force if they get that part of it right. Utah, man. Now, Utah, you're saying, wait a second. They're a powder keg team? If they get the quarterback right, don't they already have a really good quarterback? They do. He didn't play a season ago. Cam Rising, little medical redshirt action. What if Cam Rising has his best season at Utah? We saw it in 2022. They won 10 football games and made the Rose Bowl. But what if he even ups the ante a little bit? Look at what they have on this roster. A defense that only allowed 20 points a game in a Pac-12 with a lot of good offenses, they bring back 70% of that production. You know what it is with Coach Whittingham. It's a cockroach team. Doesn't matter who's coming back, but we're glad they have those guys coming back if we're a Utah fan. Doesn't matter who's on that roster. They are going to play the same way. They're going to be physical. They're going to attack you. They're going to be just tough to kill pretty much every single week. It's who they are. But you add in Cam Rising having his best season, Utah's probably winning the Big 12, and they're probably a college football playoff, not just team, but a force in that sense. So Utah, absolutely a team that if they get the quarterback position to blow up how it could blow up with Cam Rising now going back for, I believe, year 6, Cam Rising can make all the difference for them. One more team here, Florida State. Very, very careful with the DJU slander, word to the wise. I think that we still haven't seen his best just yet. He got a lot of flack for what happened at Clemson. Went to Oregon State. Clemson got worse, and Oregon State averaged 30 points a game. I'm not saying it was because of DJU, but I'm just saying I think he did his part to make that offense successful. The ACC is wide open. You got question marks about Florida State? Sure. You got question marks about Miami and Clemson, too. Virginia Tech could make a run at this thing. That's how wide open the ACC feels to me. Florida State, they don't have Keon Coleman. They don't have Johnny Wilson. Of course, that matters. But the way that Jordan Travis was able to make that team so successful a year ago, he elevated everyone's play around him. In 2022, they averaged 35 points a game. In 2023, averaged right in that same area, right around 32 points a game. It probably would have been 35 points a game had he stayed healthy and they've been able to finish the season. The bottom line is he kept the offense multiple. He was able to run it when they asked him to. He was able to get the ball out to playmakers and make good decisions. He was able to take some pressure off that running back room when he was able to run the football, which kind of caused that defense to have some other eyeballs undisciplined. DJU brings the same things to the table. He's a different player than Jordan Travis, but I think the skill set could keep that offense multiple like we talked about with Jordan Travis. So I'll just say this. What if DJ Uiagalelei hits that five-star threshold that he was billed at out of high school? Could be a lot of folks owing him an apology, and could be a lot of folks watching Florida State win the ACC for the second year and Florida State finally in the college football playoff and kind of exercising those demons from a season ago. So Florida State and DJU, Utah and Cam Rising, Tennessee and young Nico. I'm excited about that one. And Notre Dame and Riley Leonard. All teams that their trajectory, I think, will fully depend on how much they get from the quarterback. But if they get a 10 out of 10 level play from their quarterback, they're all going to be forces in the college football playoff and in that national championship picture. The difference a quarterback makes, man. The difference a quarterback makes. The difference a live chat makes, too. Everyone in there, we appreciate y'all being locked in. We appreciate y'all being a part of this show, man. The best part of what we do here is obviously the fact that we get to talk college football. But the fact we get to talk college football with y'all, the fact that it's a thing where it's a college football community where I get off the air here, we go to the Twitter sphere, we talk some more about ball. I go to my Instagram in the DMs talking about ball. So we appreciate y'all being a part of this. Let's go to the live chat right now and everyone's favorite producer, Nick Bragg, man. What's going on? What's the buzz in the chat today, man?
What's up, JD? Dude, there's a lot of buzz in the chat, and you can probably guess why. It's because we talked about Ohio State and Michigan.
There it is.
And they don't like each other very
Is that
much.
Right?
I don't think they do, man. You should all just get along. We got a couple questions already asked. I'm going to get to them. First
Love
with
it.
Ferris Khan. Says, JD, fun fact. In 2023, undefeated and high-flying SEC Alabama's run-pass ratio was higher than the quote-unquote smash Michigan. Did both teams influence teams to consider becoming more 60% or even 65% run in 2024? Are we changing back to the old ways?
That's a funny question because I think we got a similar – or we did a similar segment a year ago where I basically said, if you can have the big human beings and you can afford to play that way like Michigan did last year, like Michigan did the year before, like Alabama did last year, and sort of have a north and south approach, I think that works in college football. Now, however, the need to be multiple I think still exists. Like I don't think you can go 70% run and win a national championship. There's that way. Then there's also the other part of this where if you're able to be dynamic throwing the football downfield. So sorry, there's two schools of thought. One, recruit big human beings, make the big, you know, make the big people move the small people. That's one part of this. The other approach though is, hey, we can't recruit those big 330-pound guys every single year. Sorry, we're not going to land those guys. That's fair. At that point, you can level the playing field by landing a good quarterback and by having elite skill players. You have elite skill players, and you can kind of play geometry football, which is we're going to spread you all the way out, make it tough angles to cover to where if we get a matchup and a quarterback that can throw the football downfield, we're going to make that happen. Think Jeff Lebby, think Josh Heupel. I think that way of thinking is still very much so a way to win football games. So sort of two schools of thought there, but I do think big people moving small people is a reality in the game. And it's, again, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Everyone loves the up-tempo offense. I love it too, but it's a reality, man. You gotta be able to have those big boys up front to win big ball games.
OG Gary says, I look big mad. And man, I'm just reading all your comments. It's so much stuff today. King Epic says, JD, if you could pick any retired head coach, either living or passed away, to coach one more season, who would you pick? And this is a really interesting exclusion. It says excluding any head coach who retired this offseason. So I think we all know who that's referencing.
Yeah. Okay. So no Nick Saban, which would have probably been the answer there. Hey, let's go Bear Bryant.
Okay.
I'd love to see Bear Bryant in the transfer portal NIL era. You know, like there was a while there where Saban was chasing the Bear, and that was kind of the whole thing of can he pass Bear Bryant? Can he, you know, be the greatest of all time in relation to him? And then I think we kind of got our answer on that. I think Bear Bryant in today's modern college football would just be a spectacle. Because he is old school as it gets. There's stories about what he was as a head coach where he would just get after players. I wonder how the portal would impact Bear Bryant. I wonder if guys are getting ragdolled and then saying, hey, you know what, coach? I'm transferring out. I don't like the way that you're speaking to me. I don't like the way we do things around here. So that'd be fun, though. Different era, but I'd love to see Bear Bryant coach a season in modern college football.
Nice, JD. OG Gary says, which games are you most looking forward to this season? JD, if you had to choose one game all year round that you just were like, okay, if I can go to one game this year, I'm going to go to that one, what would you choose?
Oregon, Ohio State in Eugene. Never been to Eugene. Never been to Autzen. I think that's going to be cinema. I think both teams will have a decent shot to be, if not undefeated, maybe with one loss. I know Ohio State, I think, or who does Oregon play early? Oregon, I think, plays somebody early that I'm just blanking on right now. The bottom line here is that game is going to be incredible. I'm going to check who Oregon's playing because it's going to bother me. Oregon plays, no, maybe I'm wrong. Oregon looks like they could be undefeated. I think Ohio State, they play Iowa the week before. So both teams have a pretty decent chance at being undefeated. Oregon has to play somebody else later that I'm blanking on. Regardless, that's the one I'm going to, man. Yeah, Oregon plays at Michigan later. So Oregon plays Ohio State and Michigan. That's going to be absolutely incredible. But I think both teams will be undefeated. That'd be the one I want to go to. You know, that'd be a good one. Is OG Gary the one that said you're big mad?
Yes.
Are you big mad? Let's
I'm
talk
not.
About it.
I'm just like, man, I'm trying to make sure every chat's in here is like, which ones are questions or not. It's kind of fun to do, though. I really am always very interested in reading the comments because
you're dialed
some of
in.
Them are so mean.
Some of them are mean?
Yeah, about each other. Not about you, okay. JD, but about each other.
Say, so, like, hey, we can take it.
Yeah, we can. You know, man. I get sad when people are coming at me.
No, I mean, but it's all love. They just,
it is. I guess so.
They love themselves some Nick Break.
I guess
who can blame them? I mean, people tune in. You can listen to the show on podcast, but you come to the live show to see Nick Break on the mic. On Red Shirt Thursday, baby.
It is Red Shirt Thursday.
You know, and you look good in your red shirt. You know what I'm talking about?
I appreciate it, man. I appreciate it. Someone asked me if it was an adult small. It is not. It's a medium. But
yeah, talk that cash.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's a big adult medium, too. Those things,
they actually run very small. JD, this is a really easy question to answer. T. Smith says, ask JD, could you see a scenario where Riley Leonard comes back another year to Notre Dame?
I couldn't, just because he even talked about it in a press conference. He's like, hey, I wanted to go pro this year. That was, I think, the plan for him. Also, preseason, he was getting like top five quarterback sort of buzz when it came to that whole class. So I think this is the year for him. I don't think he's coming back another season. If he does, it's the luck of the Irish. And we're talking about Notre Dame probably pretty differently this time next season. But I would be surprised if he came back for another year, man. This is the last ride for Riley Leonard. Let's make it count if we're in South Bend, huh? Let's get it done. Let's get it done, boys.
Yeah.
12-team playoff. Let's make it happen.
JD, that's all the questions I can see.
I love it. Any break take for us going into the weekend?
No, but I will say I really like Mike Myrick comes in here and says every time, what's up, JD and chat? Go Noles. Hashtag Mike got us.
I love that. Yeah. Consistency.
Every time. I love
consistency
it
for Mike.
It's great.
That's big time, man.
Four states always represented in the chat, JD.
That's big time. Hey, you got a horse you're riding here for March Madness? Because the folks don't know, you're kind of in your bag this time of year. Like, we got the games going on in the office, and it is not uncommon for you to, like, take a peek at a game and just be locked in. Like, that's
hard to focus.
Dude, yeah, it's March. I mean, shoot, you know, we're all keeping tabs.
Yeah.
Any takes, though? Anybody you're riding for March Madness?
I'll give you my four, if you will.
Yes, put the other behind the paywall. So if you want Nick's top 16,
yeah, I'll give Venmo, you my two. The other Venmo two Nick $100. JD, look, Houston and UConn, it's so boring, but I think this is the year we're gonna have a really boring standard March Madness. We're due one. It's gonna happen.
Who's 3 and 4?
I'm just going
somewhere else. Okay,
I don't know the other. I would love to say Kentucky and Duke, but it's never that. So
hey, that's a little bit of some blue blood action.
Yeah,
I love it. Well, Nick Break, we appreciate you, brother. We'll launch into this weekend here, early weekend for us, and we'll have a tremendous weekend next week.
Yeah, guys will. I'll be gone, man.
Oh, that's right. Well, hey, Nick, we appreciate you, brother.
Yep.
You want to disclose where you're going, or are we keeping that on the DL?
I'm too embarrassed to admit where I'm going. I'm going to Disney.
Dude, that's going to be awesome.
That's for kids, though, right?
No, it's not for kids. Disney, you never age out of Disney.
I've never been. So it's my first time.
Yeah, okay. So even further reason. Well, Nick, you have a blast at Disney. Yes, Disney sir. World? Land?
I actually don't know.
World? Florida?
I don't even know that, if it's Florida or California.
Okay.
Well, I'll find out when I'm on the
wherever board. You end up at, man, we're excited to talk some ball when you get back and have a nice little tan.
Yes, sir.
That's that man, Nick Break. Making everything that you see here happen, doing the chat, doing the live show, giving you March Madness picks. Like, I mean, show up for talking some ball and stay for Nick Break and the wisdom he's bringing to the chat and to the post-game show, if you will. Hey, we're glad to have y'all here. I can't say it enough. We value so greatly the fact that you take time out of your day, out of your work day, or your studying, your drive, whatever you do, however you consume this show, we sincerely, sincerely appreciate it. We're very grateful for it. We love y'all. We appreciate y'all. Hey, we're going to keep this party rolling. Subscribe on your way out. Tell a friend about the show. Get them locked in here. We're going to keep this party rolling. We will see y'all next time.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.